Pie in the Sky Media. This series contains adult language and descriptions of graphic violence throughout. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome back, Criminal Mischief Nation, with Carolyn and Brandon. This is another bonus episode. I'm one of the producers and the host, Brandon Morgan, here as always with the great Carolyn Osorio. Carolyn.
Hi, Brandon. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. We had some rain over the weekend in Los Angeles. Now it feels like summer's going to jump on us tomorrow and it's going to be 105 degrees. Probably not, but that's just how it happens in LA. It's winter, 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 winter. Boom, summer overnight. There's no spring. So how about you? You have kind of consistent weather up in the Pacific Northwest, which is like terrible to shitty like all the time, right?
I'm so not stepping into your spider hole. Look out. You know what? We had a beautiful weekend.
Ooh, a beautiful weekend of light drizzle in the Pacific Northwest.
It was great. It was awesome. So much fun. Yeah.
Cool.
I love it.
Sweater, raincoat weather, like normal, 360 days a year.
No, I was at my son's soccer game, and I was like sitting there, like wearing this huge puffy coat and like gloves. And I mean, I had this like furry hat on. I'm like, it is almost April. And anyway, yeah. The link said.
Oh, speaking of happy April Fool's Day, did anyone fool you today?
I have a feeling somebody's going to in the next, 30 minutes.
And today I learned why Easter is always on a different day. Do you know why? Do you know how Easter is decided when it will be and why? No, I learned this today. From the great Neil deGrasse Tyson posted a video about it. He said, so Easter is scheduled to fall on the first Sunday after the first full moon, after the spring equinox.
That's so confusing. Like, who came up with that rule?
It was the Gregorian calendar or the Georgian calendar. I forget which, how do you pronounce that? I'm one way or the other. I just sounded like a fucking moron. But that calendar, and it was determined first Sunday after the first full moon, after the vernal equinox. So it would never fall the same day as Passover. It cannot be Passover be the same day ever. It was decided a long, long time ago. So that's why.
Okay. Well, did you have a good Easter?
I don't know. I guess. I don't know. It was just a
Sunday. Did you eat a bunch of chocolate?
I didn't do anything. My wife's out of town. She handles all that stuff. When my wife's out of town, the girls and I, we just like go to the batting cages and just do stupid stuff. So tonight there was a SpaceX launch from Vandenberg Air Force Base, which is visible from all of Los Angeles, and so you just see this capsule just screaming into the sky. It was amazing, absolutely amazing. It was the second one in three weeks.
Where was it going? What's it gonna do?
International Space Station just probably had some satellites on it and restocked. There were no humans on it.
So the SpaceX actually, they get to, which is Elon Musk, they get to use the International Space Station.
Get to? No, they're begging them to. We don't have a space program. We don't have, since the Challenger was scuttled. We didn't have a way. We have to use the Soyuz rockets, the Russian rockets, to resupply, to get our astronauts up there and to get all our supplies up there and to get all that. So as soon as
International Space Station.
So yeah, ISS. We just haven't had vehicles to get there that were funded by our government.
So that's what I'm saying. So they get to use it, even though they're not a government. I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing. Like, how does that work? Does he get to use it?
I don't think like for the weekend, like if he has a date, does he get to use it?
Stop. You don't know the answer. And so you're trying to
I don't know the question. What do you mean?
The question is to just dock or like, I don't know.
The only reason to go there, I don't think SpaceX has delivered humans there yet. Okay. But we have done several resupplies.
Oh my God. Did you ever see this Saturday Night Live skit that was so, it was probably the funniest one I've ever seen, which says a lot because I love SNL, right? But it was like these billionaires, it was like Elon Musk and then the Virgin guy and then obviously Jeff Bezos, and they're like all with their rocket ships that look like penises and just like how, I'm going to send it to you because that's it's fun. Like, it was totally funny. It was hilarious.
That's accurate. You know, and Elon Musk is like, it's the biggest rocket ever launched off the planet Earth. Falcon 9, heavy. He has to call it heavy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, we were going back from that shoot last week. Yeah. We saw these vehicles that had, I guess Elon Musk has this new vehicle that's out. It's like such a dude.
The Cybertruck. Like looks like a toaster.
It looks like something from like the apocalypse, you know?
Funny that you say that. It has, you know, two of his vehicles now, the Tesla Model X and the Cybertruck, they have what's called the zombie apocalypse mode on it.
Oh my gosh.
No, it's really interesting. It's really interesting.
Oh my gosh.
It's actually very interesting. So if you hit a button, the car becomes basically hermetically sealed. And the only air that comes through gets filtered so many times that you could drive through a nuclear blast, or you could drive through like fucking mustard gas, or you could drive through like a chemical warfare attack or a bio warfare attack. And you could get outside of the danger cloud with the filtration system in the car. Isn't that cool?
That is like so midlife crisis, dude.
No, so that's Elon Musk saying, you'll only survive an apocalypse that I could create if I want to, if you buy my vehicles.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Would that be a value add for you? I would be, if someone like actually said that to me with a straight face, like imagine the salesperson who's like,
hey, zombie apocalypse mode. Maybe if you buy enough of them, you could hang out with Elon, one of his ragers up at the space station. He gets to use it, you know.
Exactly. You want to take your date up there? He's got connections. ISS.
He actually might. You could be right about that, and I'm the idiot for making fun of you. He could. Exactly. He could.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he'd be like, hey.
But he wouldn't not be able to flex on that if he was up there, right? Like he'd have to.
Oh.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why you got to watch that SNL skit. That was after Jeff Bezos went into space, you know, for like 2 seconds or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
Up there. Okay, mm-hmm. So the SpaceX launch was incredible. And he's going to put people on Mars, and I think that's great. And he's also, I think, you know, a dangerous narcissist. But still, what are you going to do?
Have you ever seen him in like a swimming suit?
Yeah.
And I don't like to.
No, he looks like a marshmallow.
He looks.
I'm not saying he's overweight. I'm just saying that the color and the texture of his skin is marshmallow-esque. Yeah.
Right. It was surprising.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't looking for it. I didn't want to see it. And then I saw it and I was like.
He almost looks like he almost has the pallid tone of a corpse. Yeah. It's interesting.
It was like, huh, I wasn't really expecting that.
Because listen, the guy is one of the richest men on the planet. He's Tesla and SpaceX and all these other companies. Mm-hmm. And you only get that way by being a workaholic and by maintaining your workaholism. And he sleeps on a couch in his office because he's working nonstop, you know? So he doesn't really spend a lot of time in the sun, as it were.
It just was like, I'm not making fun of him. I'm just saying it was
shocking to see. That's the price. Those are the wages of sin or the prices of success or whatever you want to call it. That's what that's what you surrender, a nice tan or he's probably incredibly vitamin D deficient as well. But what are you going to do? I got to see a cool rocket launch tonight from my front yard.
You saw it from your front yard?
Front yard. Yeah. Look, when you're in LA and if you don't have cloud cover and if you're west of the city, it's just open sky because the ocean's so close. So it's just wide open, not a cloud in the sky tonight. Vandenberg Air Force Base is just a little north and to the west. So it goes across the sky from right to left.
That's cool.
Incredible. Yeah, really, really incredible. I have it on video. I'll send you the video.
Okay.
But anyway, let's get to the Yorkshire Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
So I did it. I think I mentioned this last week when you mentioned what the topic was this week. Season 2 of The Devil Within was called The Demons of Yorkshire. A couple of years before the Yorkshire Ripper started his spree, there was this horrible supposed demonic possession and exorcism that happened in Yorkshire. So I was kind of familiar with, you know, the economics of the place, the politics of the place, you know, the socioeconomic kind of standing with regard to the rest of England. And it's a really large county. It's one of the largest counties in England.
780 miles. Wait, yeah. So was it around the same time period?
A couple of years before, 74 was the Taylor case. And he started, this whack job started, 76, 77?
Well, they believe that he started, you know, Chris, the retired police officer that I interviewed, believes that based on his research that it was much earlier, like 1969, maybe even before then. So, but the actual spree was 1975, but it was crazy about how many cases that they would ignore and how many similarities. I mean, it was almost like that was a real challenge with this episode because it's like, there was so much. Like, remember when I did the, the Night Stalker. Yeah. And there was, felt like it was that onslaught. And I ended up doing like two episodes. And it was like one after the other, after the other, after the other, after the other. And it was like, I didn't want to do that on this one. And, but that's what it was like in all these different counties, all these other people, women who were surviving and would explain, hey, I think, and they just wouldn't, it's like, don't look. You know, don't look.
Yeah, that was really weird how unless basically the guy left a fucking calling card on the victims, the cops wouldn't think it was related. Like, it's like the cops were actively trying to not connect cases, it seems like.
They didn't want, it was very self-serving. They didn't want, it appeared to be based on what I'd seen and what I'd read and speaking with this detective, is that they didn't want that count to go higher because they didn't want people to freak out, but they were already freaking out.
Yeah.
They didn't want to, they weren't solving it. So they just looked like totally incompetent, right? Mm-hmm. And they just didn't want to, they had this idea that the person who was doing it was someone who had this thing against sex workers. He wanted them dead, and it was this vendetta thing. And so it was almost like they wouldn't consider any other victims because they wanted to believe that. So I don't know if it was an unconscious bias, or they wanted to confirm the bias. You know, that's the two things that we have, the unconscious bias and then confirmation bias, which is like, yeah, we want to believe that it's just these people. And it just shows the misogyny. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, it's so revolting. You know?
Yeah, that was, you know, you and I were speaking earlier today, and I had mentioned it was almost like, you know, the Green River UK version, you know.
Oh, totally. Yes.
With the clusters, you know, this, but he didn't have like one location where he would hunt. He had several red light districts across Yorkshire, correct?
Well, and here's the thing too, is that he was a truck driver. And so they didn't at that time want to acknowledge the fact that this is the perfect vehicle to drive through, you know, across 780 miles and back. So it was all and beyond. Like, there weren't just these boundaries that it's like, okay, I'm not getting out of West Yorkshire no matter what, if I'm going to kill. I mean, that's not what he was thinking. And especially that's why all these other victims were in other counties and they just wouldn't budge. Wow. And since they were in charge of the investigation, oh, and that was another thing, you know, it's very much like, don't come into my backyard. You know, this is our case, you know? So it was so much of this misogyny happening and just like toxic masculinity going on here in this case. And as a result, you know, it's like so many people were hurt, you know?
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Here's the one part in this where I was never as angry listening to all of your work on the Green River as I was in one moment in this. Do you know what it was?
Mm-mm.
Where he claimed an innocent victim?
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
That is really, because you're saying that the other victims weren't innocent because of their job.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that.
And I think that the people were, you know, couldn't believe it either. This is the police and then the press, which was largely a male-dominated field as well. You could hear the chastising in that one interview or that one anchor who was like, and you can't bring your knives and your blah, 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 or you're going to be prosecuted. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, really? You're not catching this person.
And victims can't protect themselves.
And they can't protect themselves. And you're going to chastise the women on top of that? I mean, it really is a show of the times.
Yeah.
In a really horrible, horrible way, you know?
Man, oh man. So this guy's MO,
mm-hmm.
similar to
yes.
the Ridgeway, pick him up, get him in the car, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you're mm-hmm. kind of in control because they're in a foreign environment and they don't know what you're going to do. And then mm-hmm. you'd have a rock or something, hit him on the back of the head.
Well, see, that was an example. I think his preferred method would be to have this hammer with him and then
hammer,
the knife.
Right. Hammer, yeah.
But he would use, like in one of the cases, he used a rock and a sock. And then the police were like, you know, no, it wasn't a hammer. This isn't the Ripper. You know what I mean?
Jesus. So he'd hit him in the head.
Multiple cases too, I think. Not just one, but multiple.
Yeah. And this detective, he got right to it. Like there was no speculation on his part. Mm-hmm. He was like, he pretended the knife was a penis and that's what he was reenacting. He's, you know, so that was strange. But then also, kudos to you for not trying to do an English accent when you were doing a bit of acting in this. That was great. Listen, a lesser performer would have tried and failed. Okay. Mm-hmm. So good for you. You stayed in your lane.
I did. I don't do accents. I told you.
Well done. But here was the weirdest part for me.
Hmm.
And it was also the saddest, but it was also So in season two of The Devil Within, basically, there was this crazy guy who he lost his job. He lost his money. He felt like his wife thought less of him. They join a church for whatever. They get talked into this church and it's kind of very culty. And there's a young, beautiful pastor who's in charge of this church group and he falls in love with her. And she didn't do anything to dissuade him, but nor did she ever say like, yes, this is going to happen. But in his mind, he's like, okay, she wants me. And this is going to be great. So he makes a move on her. She turns him down. And then she just humiliates him in front of the whole group saying that it's what's best for him. Okay.
The humiliation is what's best for him.
Correct. That everyone knows he came on to me. I said, no. It's never going to happen between us. He needs to stay with his wife. That's what Jesus wants. Like all that. Okay. Just humiliates this guy. So he snaps and tries to attack her. Like right then she goes, well, obviously that's the devil. He's possessed. We have to do an exorcism. So they get the higher ups, right, in the Anglican church they set up this exorcism for like 8 hours. They torture this guy. Okay. They tell him that there's 49 demons living inside of him. 49. After 8 hours, they get rid of like 46 of them. But then they have to, the most English thing ever. They have to break for tea. Everyone needs tea. So they're going to take a couple hours. The priests are going to go home. Michael gets to go home, get a couple hours sleep in his bed, and then come back. And they say, but be careful, because the three demons that we didn't get are like mayhem, incest, and murder. Those are the last three. So just be careful, because you're still kind of vulnerable. And he goes home and just destroys his wife. And like just rips her, literally like rips her apart.
When they were supposed to be breaking for tea?
On the break for tea. Okay. So, and then he never comes back to the exorcism. And they're like, oh, I wonder what happened to this guy. And they find him wandering downtown Yorkshire, covered in blood, completely naked. And it leads to this whole trial. And is it the church's fault? Is it this pastor's fault? All this. So it was really, really interesting how it, you know.
He played guilty by reason of insanity.
Insanity, yeah. He's still alive. He's still alive. He's free. He's out. Yeah. But the fact that these priests stopped an exorcism in the middle, even listen, do I believe in exorcism? No, I don't. Of course not. But they do. And if they wholeheartedly believed that this man was as vulnerable as he was and that the murder demon was still in there pulling the strings, okay, you don't break for tea. Okay. So similar, but not anywhere near that. I mean, but in terms of how the English behave, okay, hearing the impact statements in this, they were the most polite, heartfelt, but polite kind of admonishments of a murderer that I'd ever heard.
I know, right?
An American wouldn't, you know, unless you have like an actual like Christian with forgiveness in their heart. You hear those like, I forgive you, because if I don't, then it's hurting me more than you, but you know, all that. And I believe that. I think that's cool. But these people were like, you are the worst person that has ever lived, good sir. And I hope that you suffer an eternal torment in the fiery pits of hell. Mm-hmm. And good day. Right. Like, you know, and it was.
Well, I think it goes in line with kind of the stiff upper lip. They really have been trained with that, you know, where, cause I was watching the interview with the father, with one of the fathers and you could tell like he wanted to break, you know, he was trying so hard not to break down. I mean, you feel bad. It's like, please cry, you know, it will be good for you. And I think he died like 2 years after, you know, his daughter was murdered. And I'm sure holding that in like that is just,
especially back then. It was a time like worldwide, right? There was a massive recession going on in the UK, right? Fuel prices were up. There was the oil embargo from the Arab world. There was everybody was, you know, on welfare, they called it, on the dole or whatever. So it was a really, really tough time back then. And so the stiff upper lip part of it, you know, it goes all the way back to Churchill, you know, keep calm and carry on, like all of that, like. Jolly,
yeah, I mean,
jolly good. Tally ho.
Ingrained deep.
Yeah.
Really, you know, like it really, really is. And I think that the one woman who's one of the women who survived, I mean, she was like, and I mean, her just the venom in her voice, I was like, Yep.
So despite all the police malfeasance, they finally catch the guy. What broke the case?
I mean, basically, there were two coppers in Sheffield, not West Yorkshire, and they noticed this vehicle that they'd seen earlier in the red light district, and they noticed a man and a woman inside, and they recognized the woman as a sex worker. And so they obviously were thinking, oh, we know what's going on here.
Yeah,
we'll let's go bust him, you know? Yeah. And so then, as they're looking up the registration, they realize that the plates are not, they don't match.
They don't match. And
so then they go up to the car and the guy gives a fake name. And so then they're like, hey, we're taking you in for auto theft or whatever.
And he's like, I got to take a leak. So he dumps the hammer and one of the knives, right?
Yeah.
And they let him. Okay.
I know. And they but that's gave not,
Yeah.
If you look at a picture of this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like the devil. And I didn't want to say that he looked like the devil because that's just so like, I just didn't want to. Yeah. But he's got like this, you know, this thing where it kind of goes like when guys have hair and it kind of goes down and then goes up. It's like this kind of, no, it's like weirdos that it goes, no. Just look him up. Look him up. It's got this weird kind of like divot. Like,
okay.
And then he had this like beard that just, I mean, you just have to see him. It just was kind of crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I just didn't know if he had that personality like Gary Ridgway, where it was like, he just looked, you know, just like a Joe Blow, you know, dumpy kind of.
And he's a smaller guy, right?
You know, I don't know what his, I don't know what, how tall he was, but it just seemed like, how did he keep getting, they talked to him like 9 times. I mean, I guess his nickname at his work was like the Ripper. Like he literally had that as a nickname.
Wow.
You know?
But they get him, but he would only cop to the ones.
He would only cop to the ones that, it was almost like the collusion between the killer and I know this isn't at all accurate. Yeah. I'm just saying that, you know, they really believed, I think, and wanted to believe. And maybe it's like I said that confirmation bias. It's like they didn't want to believe that this person was just killing all these people. Like it had to make sense to them in some way. And maybe to them it made sense in a twisted way that, yeah, you know, they he's getting even with sex workers or whatever. I don't know what that, I don't, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
They wanted to believe that that was true because why would they say it's an innocent? Oh, he made a mistake. He thought, and it's like, they're showing their hand of how they feel. And it's like, you know, so he only copped to the ones that they had on their list.
Right.
And he didn't want to, because he also wanted to save face, I think, and do that insanity plea and say, yes, I was hearing voices. Yes. You know, I was on a crusade, and he wanted to totally take advantage of that profile, you know, to, I think, garner sympathy of like, of some, I have no idea, but it didn't work, you know?
Yeah. So how long did he get?
I mean, he got, you know, 13 life sentence. I mean, he's never getting out, but, right. But what was crazy is the three guys who basically got sent away for like over 20 years each, who were coerced into confessions that had nothing to do with these murders, that had like the MO was like exactly the same, but they were in different jurisdictions. And these poor guys got completely railroaded.
They're out now, right?
They're out now. One of them served 27 years. Holy like another one served like 25. I mean, these guys served some serious time. And I don't even think, you know, they have, I think in the US, you know, they have, when you're exonerated, you get paid money back for your time. I mean, it's not nearly enough, but you get something. I don't know if they have that, but I would wager that they don't, because they're not even acknowledging, you know, kind of like, yeah, if we would have, you know, put them on the Ripper murder list, you know, these guys wouldn't have gone away. There was no physical evidence tying these guys to these murders.
And he went to Broadmoor. The psychiatric hospital. I did a whole episode on Broadmoor. That place has a crazy history, and that's where like the really bad English criminals go to Broadmoor.
Well, what is it? Is it like a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest type thing?
Kind of, or like maybe like Bellevue, I guess, back east. It's mm-hmm. It's, you know, for the criminally insane, basically.
Yeah. So would it be better to go there or go to a regular prison?
Oh gosh, it's like, would you rather get punched in the nose or kicked in the nuts, right? Like neither of them are any fucking any good.
You know? I know, but you know what? Imagine if you try to do this insanity defense and it backfires and you go to someplace even worse. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I
hope that he suffered there. I mean, I really do. So it's not like I'm feeling sorry for him. I just.
So if this were like the 1800s, early 1900s.
Oh my gosh.
Broadmoor was worse because you'd get like shock therapy and that kind of shit.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
Straight jacket, padded cell, yeah. Losing your fucking mind. Nowadays, I think it's a bit more of, where there's a little bit of a clinical element to your time there, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's not like hardcore 23 hours a day in your cell, prison mm-hmm. yard, shower twice a week, all that. I think it's maybe a little bit more civilized. But then you're around absolute fucking maniacs. Mm-hmm. You know, you're around real, you know. But like I said, they're both terrible. I mean, gun to my head, I'd go to Broadmoor instead of like Gen Pop at a fucking Supermax somewhere, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But barely, mm-hmm. barely. But, mm-hmm. well, this is what your second or third time you've gone to across the pond, as it were, for one of these episodes, right? You did mm-hmm. Jack the Ripper. Now you did the Yorkshire yeah. Ripper.
Yeah.
You did a Japan episode, which is different, but still outside yeah. of the US. So how did you get this guy on the phone, this Englishman?
He reached out to me, you know, basically on our Green River thing that we've been working on, which we haven't been able to share, but based on the Shadow Girls, not the yeah. Green River thing. I apologize.
Yeah, I know.
He wanted to connect because, as you mentioned earlier, you know, there are a lot of similarities
yeah.
to the MO and, not exactly, but, and so I was like, great, let's.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
It was interesting. And he's got a bit of a vendetta in his voice.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
He really, really. But I think that, you know, diving in so deep to, I mean, the difference I would say, absolutely super important to say, is that the Green River Killer investigation, they wanted to solve it and they were doing everything they yeah. could to solve it. Like, I totally believe that, you know, it was a very calm, I mean, the very similar thing where the index cards are on the, you sure. know, and computers and, you know, witnesses not coming forward because they don't trust the police, you know, just lots of, you know, and then you have a killer who's, you know, there's no connection to them, you know? So I think that, you know, that's a huge difference there, but, Chris, and based on the way that they do their public disclosure, where you can't even, I mean, it's like the JFK files, like,
yeah, you that's where they keep that in 20 years. That's,
that is, that kind of stuff is so like messed up.
And it just reeks of cover up. That lack of transparency is, it's,
yeah, they don't want people to know what they did.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And they get away with it.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that they can't even go back and, like, they don't have any crime scene evidence that they can do DNA testing with and compare it to, you know, because now that he's dead, you know, he's not going to say anything, obviously. And he didn't say anything before, you know, yeah. So I just feel really bad for all the families and the victims, obviously, that, you know, they're never going to get justice. And he said, you know, the victims feel, or some of the victims, especially the ones that he's talked to that survived him, you know, feel like they were, you know, attacked twice, not only by the killer, but just the way that they were treated by the police.
Yeah.
And not being heard and being dismissed. And, you know, one woman came forward and was like, hey, I think there's a guy that walked up behind me and he started talking to me and I just felt really creepy. And I think he could have been the Yorkshire Ripper. And they're like, oh, what's his accent? And she's like, well, he had a local accent, Yorkshire. Nope. Like, nope.
And it turned out they were wrong about that.
They were totally wrong.
Oh, wow.
And they were so like, just arrogant about it. Like, you could just hear them back in those days, like smoking their cigarettes and just probably, you know, thinking they know everything and they don't want help and they just want to like control.
And not knowing it was before there was the term serial killer even existed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah. not that I'm defending them, but they didn't know what they were fucking dealing with, right?
Well, they did after the signature kept repeating and people yeah. kept dying. They didn't want to, putting other people at risk. Like, they should yeah. have made an announcement. Like, everybody, we don't know for sure, but we believe he's traveling in different areas. But again, they didn't, I don't think they wanted to draw attention to it because then that would make people be like, well, why can't you catch him?
Right.
You know? It's just, you know, that's the thing about not being transparent about stuff. It really can affect, you know, people's lives.
Of course. Of course. All right. Well, hey, well done. Well told. Tough topic, but it was nice hearing that an angry Englishman was a nice little touch, you know. Mm-hmm. So great job. What do you got coming up next week? Any idea?
I'm actually working on an episode that'll be a little bit different. It's with somebody that I interviewed for the Shadow Girls. His name is Jim Fuda. Cool. And he is really just passionate about human trafficking, sex trafficking, and this scourge that affects so many people. Yeah. And he has some really interesting things to say about it. I was like, whoa, I learned a lot. So I feel like it's something I want to share. And so, yeah.
Terrific. Well, looking forward to it. Until then, we hope you enjoyed this bonus episode of Criminal Mischief. If you did, head on over to Apple Podcasts, please, and consider giving us a rate, review, maybe share us with your friends. Also, please consider supporting the great companies that support our show, because without them, we couldn't do what we do. Carolyn, again, well done. Thank you very much. And anything you'd like to add?
Nope. I'm Carolyn Osorio with Brandon Morgan, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, guys. Stay safe out there.
From Cloud 10, Criminal Mischief is a pie-in-the-sky production recorded in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We're produced by Brandon Morgan and myself, music by Soundstripe. I'm Carolyn Osorio, your writer and host.